Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Fred Zinke is the ultimate pot stirrer. He drops one tweet and sees 60 responses after that there in a thread that I got tagged into. We're going to talk about that. Is it time to change a category rule? Next on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by the good folks from So Rare. I am Jeff. He's Fred, the man by the doorknob, and he's also the pot stirrer. He's the instigator. He is the guy that behind the guy that started this whole action here today. He's Fred Zinke tweets this morning. After looking at the respective saves and holds leader lists, I can't figure out why there's so much resistance to saves plus holds as a category. Let's get to a place where we look at relief pitcher skills over managerial tendencies and preferences. A nice little tweet, you know, provocative a little bit, but not like total bomb throwing. But man, you got lots of traction today, Fred.
Yeah, I did have a hunch that that tweet would garner some responses. That wasn't why I said it. I said it because I meant it. I wasn't looking for attention. In fact, I mentioned to you, Jeff, before we started recording that I knew I was going to have a busy day at work. I was driving in to work this morning. I was listening to you and Scott from early Monday morning, late Sunday night, and listening to you talk about Domingo Acevedo and Jimmy Hergett and how Aaron Loop got a save and like Aaron Loop getting a save at the manager's whim. His first save of the year, by the way. He's also 0-5. Anyways,
not really that good at baseball. Yeah.
He's been okay this year. 3.96 ERA. He's not that good. Not very good. 130 WHIP. Yeah. Anyways. And that was like going to, you know, it might influence your league and everything. And as I was driving, and I've thought this many, many times before, I was like, God, there's got to be a better way for us to play this game. And I've thought about this lots before. So anyways, I got to work and I was like, I am going to put this out to the masses. And if no one likes it or if some people like it, I don't really care because I've thought it through many times before. But I know, okay, let's start by acknowledging people are resistant to change, right? Like we're all resistant to change.
Fantasy players in particular about league rules, 100% agree.
Absolutely. Baseball in general is resistant to change. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of tweet responses today from people saying, right on, Fred, my league switched to save plus holds a certain amount of years ago and we love it and we've never gone back. And then there's also a lot of people saying, for various reasons, I would never try this. Which kind of fits my thought of maybe more people need to try it and maybe we're being resistant to change.
Exactly.
So I just think, like these guys like Acevedo and Hergett, and trying to decide if the Cubs are going to give their next save to Brandon Hughes or Rowan Wick or some random guy because that's what the manager feels like doing in a game that, let's be honest, the Cubs themselves don't really care that much about in September. Like the managerial staff, whatever they say, we care more about who gets a Cubs save right now than the actual managers and coaches of the Cubs probably do.
For sure. Because what does one more save right now for the Cubs matter?
Right. Which is a problem. That we care more about that than the teams do. I hear the counter arguments. I know that managerial decisions impact other positions too. Lineups, order, batting orders, who gets in the lineup, who's where they are in the batting order. I know all that impacts, but I think Sammy Reed said it today in the thread, which I did get a chance to read a bit before we started. And he said what I was kind of thinking, like all those managerial decisions impact the categories a bit. So whether your guy hits second or seventh in the lineup over a long haul does impact his production a bit. The saves is different. It's all or nothing.
It's the one position in baseball where the player has one job. That is to get saves. He has a secondary job to get strikeouts and ratios, but basically, there's only one person on the field that can provide it. It is that relief pitcher. There is no, you got all the hitters. They all can provide all those stats. Yes. Only one person can provide saves.
Go ahead, Jeff.
That's been a problem from time at Finnenum, though. I mean, it's one of those things that's always been an issue, though. It's always been the case there. We've almost gone full circle on relief pitcher usage. So like we're in the 70s and you have an ace reliever concept here where Goose Gossage would pitch multiple innings or, Mike Marshall would pitch, multiple innings. Now, Mike Marshall is another extreme. But point being is they weren't beholden to the closer job necessarily in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. It was just, I need an out here. I'm going to use my best pitcher here, period. We've gone almost back to that in a way, and we're kicking and screaming. Like sabermetrically, things are getting managed from a better standpoint. Looking analytically, it is better for the team that Jimmy Hergett comes into the sixth inning at times to protect the lead when it's still close, when it's 5-1 or 4-1 in the sixth. Even though that you got the thick of the order coming through. This is when we need you to pitch. Fine, and he's probably fine with it. It's not like he has. Jimmy Hergett has a saves incentives clause that is massive. I mean, he's a low paid pitcher to begin with there. He's just happens to be a more effective one. We just want to be able to find a way to profit it. So some of our complaints, my complaints, by the way, they're my complaints. I've been complaining about it a lot. They ring hollow because it's all self-interested. I understand that.
So this is an area where I think that the fantasy community hasn't kept up with the times in the changes in baseball. And like you said, the changes in baseball are smart. The way the Rays manage their bullpen is smart. They do a good job with it. So let's say when most of us who started playing, so 90s to early 2000s, back then teams had their closers. So there were about 30 of them to go around, and teams typically almost always put their best reliever as their closer. So picking the closers at that point was very much a skills assessment. And, there's obviously manager decisions, but managers back then, the closer was the closer. The closer got almost all the saves, and the closer was often the team's best reliever. If he wasn't the best reliever, he was pretty darn close to the team's best reliever. I feel like our fantasy landscape is still reflecting that managerial mindset. The league has shifted. The league has gotten smarter. Like you just said, the league has realized that getting through 3, 4, 5 in an order in the seventh inning is more valuable than getting through 7, 8, 9 in a ninth inning, for example. And we haven't kept up with that. We're still, and now we're complaining all the time that the Reds don't have a closer and that, these other teams, the Rays don't have a closer and that the Mariners often share saves and everything because we want them for an old fashioned roto category set we've made, which we can tweak and kind of keep up with the times because I know the hold stat isn't perfect. However,
it's terrible. Saying it isn't perfect is not really stating the case here. Holds are terrible. They're better than they used to be. At least now you have to get three outs, but they're terrible.
So I think the three out rule, which I know isn't totally a three out rule if you finish an inning, but if you put a pitcher in as a manager and he finishes an inning, like it's often a key situation. And if he doesn't finish the inning on that batter, he's got to stay in because of the three out rule. I think the holds are a better stat now than they were before the three out rule. Cause you used to have the loogies, right? That would get all these holds with one out. We don't have those anymore. In fact, almost all of the holds leaders are right-handed, just happens to be this year. So we're not seeing that at all.
Another bias, by the way, that makes it terrible. I'm left-handed.
I haven't fully run the numbers, but if you want to take the top, say 15 guys in holds and figure out their average ERA and WHIP, I would say, and strikeout rate and walk rate, whatever you want to do, I would say that these guys will come out even with the closers in the top 15 in saves. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there's much of a skill. Like, I'm seeing guys in here, like Anthony Bass, I think has an ERA in the ones right now. Andres Munoz, one of the best pitcher relievers so far.
Munoz has been one of the best awesome. Relievers
position. Devin Williams. Even like, and I may mispronounce your name, but Ciano Perez on the Orioles. Most people don't even know who this guy is.
Because he's a former Red.
He's got 25 holds this year. He's tied for fourth in the league, and he has great ratios. He's pitched really well this year. Hector Neris is there. He's been a great eighth inning guy for the Astros in a really good bullpen. AJ Minter is the leader. He's been one of the best relievers in baseball this season. So I'm not buying anything where it's like that the closers are no longer better than the guys who are getting the holds. They're just manager's whims, these closers guys. Jason Adam is on the list. Colin Pache is on the list. Brooks Raley is on the list. A lot of Rays on the list because the way they mix and match their bullpen. Michael Fulmer, who's on the list, who's been a good reliever for the Tigers and the Twins this year. They're not perfect, but neither are the saves guys. Like, we've also have guys with saves and high ERAs or a high whip, right? And who get a lot of saves. I like fantasy baseball when it can to, like, reflect at least mostly the real game. Like, okay. I've said before that I think it would be a problem in a fantasy league if Corbin Burns went in round six and you were just like, oh, we just don't really need starting pitchers. No, starting pitchers just aren't important in our league. I'd be like, okay, well, there's something wrong with your fantasy baseball setup. Like, if Max Scherzer goes in round eight in your league, I've always felt that way in fantasy football with non-super flex leagues. Like, how does the two-time right. MVP Aaron Rodgers go in round nine? Give me a break. It doesn't reflect. He's one of the 10 most important guys in the NFL. So I'd like my fantasy baseball to mostly reflect the real game. And it mostly does. We're a little too high on the steals, guys. Like, Whit Merrifield shouldn't be a third round pick. I'm actually hoping the new rules next year increase the steals and therefore the steal scarcity is a little less. And maybe we can make those steals guys a little more appropriately valued, but we're mostly there. Like, the best players are going in the best players in baseball go in the early rounds.
Right.
And we've got these weird reliever situations where, like, Jake McGee is like a 10th round main event draft pick.
Like, doesn't make you're looking at me when you say that. You did that on purpose.
I didn't mean to. And the holds aren't super predictable from one year to the next. Like, if you go and look at last year's hold leaders, they're not this year's holds leaders totally. So there is going to be some,
because they all graduated to closing.
Some do for sure. And sometimes, and they're relievers, like, they go up and down in their skills so much from one year to the next. So you're going to have to stay plugged into your league. I'm even open to some sort of setup where saves are worth two and holds are worth one in a league score in that category, something like that. Mm-hmm. But I would like to get to a point where, like, for example, Yoan Duran on the Twins is one of the best relievers in baseball. Like he is awesome. Right. He's just pulling up his stats from this year. And I have to pull up his stats because he's been on waivers in some of my leagues lately. Like, 178 ERA, 0.96 whip, 87 strikeouts. Been great this year. Might get to 100 strikeouts. Maybe not quite. He'll probably be close. He's sitting on waivers in some of my leagues, even my 15 team super league. He's been sitting on waivers lately because he's not getting enough saves. He's not getting saves. He has eight this year. So nobody mm-hmm. really wants him right now. Like, that's a problem in my mind when I'm chasing Brandon Hughes and Jimmy Hergett and Yoan Duran is just sitting on waivers and nobody wants him. I think that's a problem. I think that's a problem we should work to address.
I think that's valid. I think there's something to be said for that. Seeing though, as we can't get leagues to accept on base percentage instead of batting average right now, I mean,
which is a good change too. I agree. And I was resistant on that one, but I've come around.
Yeah. Although Liz actually has a pretty good principled take against it, is it rewards the take and rake guys, and that, you know, the yep. hitting for contact is undervalued. But in real life, that's what on yes, base matters.
That's baseball now. I hope again that the ban on shifts increases the batting average and encourages guys to not take and rake quite so much, and then maybe
only if it leads to more run scoring. I mean, that's yep. the whole point is so we can score more runs and win games. I mean, but I don't know. The whole battle is still over the strike zone. Until pitchers are no longer throwing 93 mile an hour sliders on the black or, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. I still think we're going to have some issues there, but
yeah.
But your point's well taken. My concern was like the remedy doesn't match the problem. But you've made also a good point about the change in the hold category. So Towel Wars has actually done that in one league. The Towel Wars 12 team mixed league draft has alternate categories. Instead of saves, it is saves plus holds. Instead of wins, we use innings pitched. So that you're no longer on the whim of like a pitcher getting the win, but you know, going deep into games matters, you know, a lot more. So pitchers that get run really bad luck on wins luck, for instance, they're not nearly as affected by this. You could do the same with quality starts, but quality starts, I think, is a little bit flawed too.
I've always thought that an idea worth looking into, just in a similar vein, is wins plus quality starts, where your pitcher gets a point for a win and he gets a point for a quality start, and relievers can get you points when they get that vulture win. Yeah. I've even seen people recommend wins plus quality starts that didn't get a win. So a pitcher can't get you two in one start. He can get you the win or he can get you the quality start. But again, like, I want us to chase skills. I think that's kind of where fantasy baseball, I feel like, started. Like, I'm going way back now to like reading these initial, the tales of the initial fantasy players. Mm-hmm. Like, it was about, with your friends, trying to like one up each other and figure out who are really the good players in baseball, who's going to really play well this year, settle the arguments at the bar, settle the arguments on the couch or in the backyard. I can tell you who's better than you can tell me who's better. Like, I want us chasing good players and not chasing these random stats. And chasing wins is a similar problem.
It is.
So, like, I think a wins plus quality starts or something of that nature. And maybe the quality start needs to change a bit, where it's either three runs in six innings or two runs in five innings.
Right.
If you throw at least five and you only give up two, you get a quality start. Or if you throw six and give up three, because really five innings and two runs allowed is a better start than six innings and three runs allowed.
Yeah. So what would you say about the argument that people don't necessarily need to have the perfect game, the perfect categories? Yep. Like, we love this game the way it is. I like chasing saves. I like chasing batting average or wins. I know this game. I don't necessarily want to have to learn a new skill now. I've been playing fantasy for 20 years. This is not Jeff saying this. This is the hypothetical Jeff saying this. What say you to that?
Yeah, and I get that. And that's where I started by saying people are resistant to change, and mm-hmm. that's why. And I get it. Like, so I'm going to do my own projections once the season ends for next season, and it would be a lot easier for me if saves plus holds is never a thing. When I put that tweet out, like, that's more work for me, because I'm not used to projecting holds, and now it's going to have to become a new skill that I work on and determine how repeatable are holds and who and everything else. So I get it. It's less work for all of us to leave everything
and for the players to track bullpen usage, because now you're tracking the seventh and eighth innings too, not just the ninth inning.
That's right. And I mean, at that point, you're more into getting really good relievers and trusting that if it's Devin Williams, whether he gets saves or holds, he's pitching high leverage situations almost all the time. That's what you're really, when you draft, if you would, that's what you'd be drafting more towards. Mm-hmm. So maybe you wouldn't even draft Craig Kimbrell. You'd be like, I'm not even confident this guy's any good. So maybe he'd get me saves, or maybe he'll just blow up. But I'd rather just draft, like, going back to our drafts in March, you'd be like, I'd rather just draft Devin Williams. I think he's really good. I don't know if it's going to be holds or if it's going to be saves, but I think he's really good. I think Chris Kimbrell's not very good anymore, so I'm out. And I feel like that would be a better fact game for us and a better facsimile of what baseball managers are doing, what teams are doing.
You know, if you play score sheet, you're already that way.
I just think it's a simple tweak that would help a lot. But you're right. It's a change, and people don't really like change. And people like to say, like, I like it the way it is. I'm not saying like the NFBC main event's going to have saves plus holds next year or anything like that. I'm just saying if people tried it, a lot of the feedback I get from people who have tried it was the same with super flex leagues and fantasy football. The people who tried it would come back out to people and say, this was good. This was really fun. Having the extra quarterback, drafting quarterbacks in round one, this was great. I really loved it. And slowly people are getting on board with this idea because the people who are doing it are reporting back that they that they were enjoying it more. I think maybe Saves Plus Holds could be the same thing where if people would, the people who try it, you know, would like it. But like you said, like it involves a willingness to play the game a little differently. If we invented the game right now, I don't think there's any way we'd have saves as a category.
I'd agree, especially the way teams are using pitchers. So I agree.
Think it's similar to your OPS argument. Like when we first changed to OPS in Tote Wars, I was in Tote Wars then. Like I did Tote Wars with batting average, and there was lots of resistance, as you know, probably more than I do.
Oh yeah, and there still is every year.
Yeah. But OPS, or sorry, OBP. Sorry, I meant to say.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah. But it's like it's a more. We knew this. Like it's a more accurate stat of how well the hitter's getting on base, which is what that category was kind of supposed to cover the whole time, right? Like we got the homers to cover the power, we got the steals to cover the speed. The batting average was supposed to cover how good he is at getting on base. We figured out eventually that didn't really totally cover it, thanks to guys like D. Gordon who hit for average but didn't walk, or Rougned Odor when he was good a few years ago, things like that. Mm-hmm. We found a better way, and it took a little adjusting. And the first year I had to put in the column on my spreadsheet for OBP, I kind of grumbled.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, and how am I going to figure out how to weight this? Oh, and I don't have a reference point for it. But you know what? After a year or two, I was like, okay, sure, OBP, let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think the saves plus holds could be the same thing. And I think you draft relievers based on, I know relievers wouldn't go as early. I've seen people make that point. And I get that. And I'm actually okay with that because that's how real teams value relievers anyways.
Yeah, like, that's right.
They wouldn't go as early. Maybe a few great ones would. But that's okay if they don't go as early. You still got to do well in the category. And Sammy Reed made this point. You still have to balance over the course of the year how many relievers you're going to use, because the saves and holds category is going to move up at a new rate. You've got to keep up in that category. Are you going to use two? Are you going to use three? Are you going to use four?
Right.
It's going to be his own set of decisions. And people do not like to go out in the wilderness, and they do not like to try to figure this out on their own. They want predictability.
It's hard enough as it is to predict what we have. So yes, I get it.
They want the predictability, but I think if they could get used to the change, just like how we got used to OBP, I think there's so many smart guys in fantasy baseball. And what's funny is the guys who usually protest the most are the guys who put the most time into fantasy baseball. They would be the ones to figure out the change first.
Yeah.
They would get the advantage. They would do it. Like they would put the work in, and by next April, they would have a plan.
That's probably true.
But they're the ones who protest, I find, the changes the most, even though I'm like, no, you should want us to change. You will fit. You're the smart guys. You will figure it out. You're the guys who put the time in. That's to your advantage.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So,
all right. So, so check out Fred's tweet. Check out the timeline on that. A lot of good arguments, pro and con on that. Before we move on, a quick note from one of our sponsors, the Sorare. Sorare MLB is an NFT-based free-to-play baseball game played with officially licensed Major League Baseball cards. Sign up today at Sorare.com/MLB, and you'll receive 13 common cards to start your collection. Build 7-player lineups from cards in your collection and play weekly competitions with scoring based on real-life player performance. Compete for rewards with other fans around the world. For more information on gameplay and to sign up, visit Sorare.com/MLB. There's no better time to join Sorare than ahead of our postseason gameplay. This is, you know, they're a sponsor of ours now. They're big in the soccer world, and they're branching into baseball. I'm kind of intrigued to see how this game works out. But it is a fantasy type of game. Looking forward to seeing that. They're NFT-based, though, so for what it's worth. So they work in conjunction with Topps, basically, on that. Let's get to a few news and notes. And this wasn't even the outline, but it looks like you're going to have Alejandro Kirk back in your lineup after he missed the weekend.
Yeah, I think so. I think it looks like, I haven't seen have you seen the Jays lineup for tonight? I haven't.
I saw that he was DHing today. I thought I saw. I will hold, please, and I will confirm that. But
I usually check the lineups. I'm pulling up right now.
Okay. I'm a little on tilt right now because I was streaming Zach Davies in a desperate move to get wins in a National League. I look up, I see, hey, Diamondbacks are up 5-1 in the fifth. Davies is out of the game. So
Here we go. Saves plus wins plus quality. Actually, wins plus quality starts wouldn't have mattered. He wouldn't have got either one. You're right. Yeah. Kirk's hitting cleanup today.
And DH.
I know Rob Silver was it Rob on the weekend. Maybe it was someone else. I think it was Rob though, who said, it was Jeff Zimmerman who said I may have to let him go. Like, if he can't help me the last couple weeks enough after such a great season, I may have to let him go on some teams. So there you go, Jeff. I hope you hung on to him because he's back in the cleanup spot at DH, and the Jays have room to do that with Jansen. Could catch for a couple of days, maybe even all three games this series. They really had to give Kirk a little bit of extra time at DH. So he should still be good to go.
There you go. So
yeah,
good news there. He's someone that next year, one of the better catchers this year, obviously made the All-Star team, hitting for average and power, 13 homers, 59 RBI, 56 runs. Real Muto is going to be the first catcher to go. Dalton Varsho the second. I have no Dalton Varsho this year. I'm going to hang a big L on that.
I could see Will Smith second. I think that'll be close.
Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah.
Where did Kirk was what, 4 or 5? I mean, Kirk or Sal Perez next year. Who do you got?
Sal Perez. So I'll throw something at you with Kirk that I think, and it's the old, you know, the old expression, a good second half hides a good first half hides a poor second half. So
sure.
Kirk since the All-Star break has a 689 OPS. So since the All-Star break, he's hit 261 with two homers.
Mm-hmm.
So he was great in the first half. 315 he hit prior to the All-Star break with 11 homers. That's the Kirk that's the high end Kirk, like a guy who could get you about 20 homers and hit 300. That's a great catcher value. Since the All-Star break, this is the bad Kirk, because the bad Kirk has no power and is more like a six homer guy. And then all you get is batting average. Since the All-Star break, you haven't even been getting that. In fact, he has 11 runs scored in the second half, and that's with him hitting cleanup a lot, or third even some of the time. So
maybe they shouldn't bat him cleanup.
I think they shouldn't. By the way, I don't know if you caught this, not being in on Toronto, but there was a big controversy in Toronto. Have you seen the video of Kirk going from first to home a few days ago? And he's like short and he's overweight and he's like chugging along the bay. It's a great video. And the Jays fans loved it. And mm-hmm. a radio guy from Montreal, because Montreal always hates Toronto. No, I don't know why.
I know the radio guy in question. He's one of the very first radio guys I've ever worked with, Matthew Ross.
Okay, yeah. So he had this negative comment about Kirk. And then Alek Manoah jumped all over it and was basically accused him of kind of like body shaming Kirk.
Yeah.
And being like, no, this guy is a good athlete who's his own unique body type and is making it work in the majors. And like, I'm proud of him. And how dare you? And then Matthew like totally stood down on the whole thing and apologized and said, you're right. The bad look by me. I shouldn't have done it. I get it. He was kind of, I don't know. He said it was a bad look on his part. And that was great. So he said he apologized full out. It's not a matter anymore, but
People still want his head. They don't want Matthew to keep his job.
Yeah, I guess so.
I feel bad for Matthew because he was completely utterly in the wrong on this one here. But having worked with him before, I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he made a mistake.
Yeah, and it's like a fine line with Kirk, because Jays fans and baseball fans in general, but especially Jays fans, do kind of like celebrate and joke about Kirk's very unique body for a baseball player, because he's not only a heavier guy, but he's also quite short. But he's faster than he looks, and he's a hard worker on the base paths. Like, he runs hard, and you can see it. So Jays fans do joke about Kirk. Like, that's a running, like, everybody has fun with it. And then this guy, it sounds like Matthews took it like just a little too far. But it is something everyone talks about, and it's something about how Kirk is going to age throughout his career that I know people have talked about. Like, how is this guy gonna, with his body type, how is he going to be at age 30
right
beyond that? So anyways, I don't think he should be hitting cleanup because he's not a very quick base runner. I think that matters. He should be probably hitting 6th or 7th.
Yeah,
especially with the way he's been hitting.
Yeah. I agree. And I thought you were going to throw my boy Dansby in my face, because he's in the outline there doing the same thing where he struggled a lot lately.
Yes. So these are the things we more see when we step away from the season and start getting ready for next year. But Dansby Swanson's the exact same case. Like, on the surface, the season looks good. He's hitting 279 20 homers, 17 steals, 92 runs, 87 RBIs. Like, he might get to 95 in both of those categories. Well, not if he doesn't start hitting better, but then when you look at the breakdown, like post All-Star break, he has a 669 OPS. He's got five homers, three steals, and a 250.
It just shows how good his first half was, though. It's still a good season.
First half was good. It was 833 OPS. It partially also shows how good how valuable hitting second in the Braves lineup is.
Yeah.
Because he's had half of a good season. 833 OPS in the first half isn't amazing. It's good. It's not amazing. Mm-hmm. And then a 669 in the second half, but the run, like, he won't get to 100 probably in either category. He has an outside shot and runs. I think it shows how great that spot is. If he's back hitting second in the Braves lineup, that's really valuable. If he's not, then we're going to have to evaluate how good of a hitter we really think he is.
And I'll still get him in the 10th round again next year when he starts the year batting eighth and everyone's, oh, he's batting eighth again. He's striking out again. Okay.
Career 736 OPS. On. So that's career 736 OPS is not great. It's like a little.
All
better.
I'm saying is 2 years in a row, he's been a tremendous source of profit.
Absolutely. It just came in bunches this year. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be up to the individual to decide like, is it going to come in bunches again next year? Which of the two bunches do you really trust? I think you'll trust him.
Yeah.
You've had positive experiences with him.
Yeah. I'll trust him, but maybe I'll trust him in the fifth instead of the third. You know, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Speaking of the Braves, Spencer Strider is going to get his next start pushed back a few days. So he may not start this week. He was originally going to start Friday. So instead he could pitch next week in Washington instead of Friday against the Phillies. Interesting, because obviously the Braves, they want to win the division rather than the wild card, if at all possible. There's value in that. But at the same time, Strider is way over his projected innings for the year. If we were playing Strat-O-Matic, you'd have to shut him down right now, because he's just used up his innings. But this is a guy I'm watching closely, to say the least.
That's a zero if you had Strider.
It might be a zero this week. That's right.
A zero because he pitched Sunday. It's hard to complain with what Strider's given you, but like, if I bet every Strider owner has him in their lineup this week. I think.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know you got a great week last week from him, 19 strikeouts in his two starts, but
yeah,
you're gonna get.
Did the Braves play yesterday?
The Braves yesterday, I believe they did not.
Then you can probably still swap them out.
Oh, you're right. Then you could still swap them out. Since they're not, you're right. In NFBC, you could still swap them out.
Yeah.
Sixth in the majors in strikeouts, even though his first 11 appearances came in the bullpen.
That's amazing.
It is. Like, if those had been starts, again, I get it. Like, his innings limit. Like, if you look at the innings totals of all the guys around him in strikeouts, they all have like 30, 40, 50 more innings.
Yeah.
So really impressive. I don't know what we're going to do with him for next season, but he feels like an ace.
Yeah. The question is, like, guy that throws that hard, gets that, you know, so reliant on strikeouts. We always worry about injury with that. But then again, sometimes those are third round player becomes a first round player. There's still room for profit.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. I think there, yeah, he could, if he's drafted next year as a low end ace, there could still be room for profit. A fun stat on Strider I'd be interested to know is he has 202 strikeouts and he doesn't have a save. He has a save chance. Never mind. I was going to say, I thought he had a save this year from back when he was in the bullpen. And I was going to say, when was the last guy with 200 strikeouts and a save? But
probably someone like John Smoltz or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Someone who's more adept at baseball reference queries can figure that part out for us.
Yeah.
But that can be fun to see where he goes next year for sure. I'm looking forward to those early drafts.
Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah. Those. Oh, I don't usually go in those, but I love to get the results. To put some of his in perspective, just as I was looking at him. So he's sixth in strikeouts of the five guys ahead of him. Only one has a better ERA. That's Dylan Cease. Only one has a better whip. That's Aaron Nola.
Yeah.
So that's like really, really impressive.
It is. It's super impressive.
Yeah. Best waiver wire find.
Yeah.
Depends on the size of your league, I guess. There's people in shallow Yahoo leagues who got Julio Rodriguez off waivers or someone like that. So
we did the RotoWire staff keeper league on opening night. And we're in the reserves, and you can take, you know, we have a reserve slash minor league draft after the auction. It's keeper league too. So I grabbed Strider in the reserve slash minor league portion of the draft. Seeing him pitch and dominate against the Reds, I'm like, okay, this guy's good. I'm bumping him up a little bit.
Yeah.
So that was one thing I did right in that league, basically. Because
he's a great example of that drafting skills, not roles, right? Like going full circle to the reliever discussion. Just
I have no
Strider, and I knew he was a really good pitcher at the start of the year. I just didn't like, the results were amazing. I just didn't like the role, and I didn't get in on him, and that was one that didn't work out for me at all.
Yeah. I wish I had more of them. I didn't get them in any of the NFBC leagues. So obviously I was so brilliant that I didn't follow that up anywhere. So I think I bid on him in lots of places, but again, probably because of the role, which shame on me.
Yeah.
All right. A couple more of the topics before we sign off. We did title this whole podcast, The Twins Collapse. So we should probably talk about that. Before we do that though, quick note from our friends on the Blue Wire Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All of our podcasts are hosted on the Blue Wire Network, so we thank them for that. The Twins, they lost again to the Guardians. They're done. Sonny Gray went on the IL. You know, if you were counting on two steps from Sonny Gray and some strikeouts this week, your week got off to a terrible start. And by saying you, I mean me. My week got off to a terrible start. Had him, you know, two innings pitched. He's going on the IL with that hamstring injury. Gave up like four runs and five hits, one strikeout. And that's it for the week. That's done. So I was trying to maybe either hold off or gain 1 point in strikeouts. That's not going to happen now.
That was one of the worst weeks. Right? Like with a couple weeks left, I feel like some people have kind of resigned themselves to where they're at probably by next week. This is that week where this last week and this week where you still feel like you're like, okay, if everything came together, I can move up. I just need everything to come together. And then to start the week off like that, poor performance, injury, done for the week. Really, really frustrating.
Yeah. Brutal. And
you're right. The Twins are, it all fell apart.
It really did. And what went wrong there? I mean, so one thing, Byron Buxton got hurt again.
Yep.
You know, dog bites man. It happens. But the problem is that was a huge, that he's, as much as it killed us in fantasy, it killed the Twins a lot more. They're saying they might have him. They're still hoping to have him before the end of the regular season. That note was on September 10th. Now, after the collapse is pretty much complete, what's the rush? Why bring him back now?
Oh, yeah. If you want to bring him back, sure, at some point, but there's no point in rushing him. He's played in 92 games, so that's 41 behind the team leader, Luis Arraez. He leads the team in homers. He leads the team in OPS. Not by much, but he leads the team in OPS.
Yep.
So, like you said, it's a bigger loss for him probably than fantasy managers. Like going into next year, he'll be not on my do not draft list, but I doubt I've never had him on a team. I probably won't next year because I'll probably project him for 100 games next year.
I rarely draft him for that reason. And, you know, he started a run shortly before he got hurt again. I wonder if that's correlated, but, you know, for the longest time, they wouldn't let him run. And then in the last 10 days before he got hurt again, he had 3 stolen bases. So he was just starting to run again. But yeah, it's just it's so tough.
And when we start getting into off-season work and we start talking about the fact that there's going to be more steals next year, because it seems like it could be a little bit easier to steal a base, that doesn't totally really apply to Buxton, because the reason Buxton isn't getting steals right now is not because he can't steal the bases.
Right.
Right. He's not getting the steals right now, we think, out of injury prevention. That's not going to, you make the base bigger. That doesn't change anything as far as injury prevention. You can make the pickoff moves change. If the reason they're not letting him run much is injury prevention, then I don't see why that necessarily changes, unless they decide next year it's just so easy for him to steal that they've got to let him do it. But when I start projecting certain players to have an uptick in steals, I don't think he's going to be one of them.
No, I agree. I tend to agree. Starting pitching has been a problem for this team. They traded for Tyler Mahle, and then he got hurt. That was bad luck. But they were a short a starter, I felt like, all along, that they've been short one starter. They tried to address their bullpen. That didn't work out very well. But they traded Taylor Rogers before the start of the season to try to get another starter. That also didn't work out. So they've been chasing all season long on that. They've had two major injuries with starting pitchers. Mahle and then Chris Paddock, both, you know, guys that they traded for, they thought were going to get them innings, and neither did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree with you. I'm not totally faulting the Twins on this one with pitching, because they have tried. Mm-hmm. They've tried the big move like Mahle. And then they've tried the little moves like the Band-Aids, like Chris Archer, who has two wins. But like
averaging four innings a start, he's made 25 starts, no relief appearances.
Yeah,
he has 102.2 innings. He is firmly on my don't pick up list.
Yeah,
and I have to yell at Tim every time he tries to add him to our list. There, he's right there with Jason Hayward. Just get him off. I don't want him in my field of vision.
Yeah,
I just don't want him.
Dylan Bundy was another one. They tried to kind of do that one on the cheap. He's got a 4.68 ERA, and then they've had some bad luck. Mahle was
Bailey
bad
Ober
luck.
Got hurt.
Yes. Bailey Ober was supposed to be he was a popular fantasy sleeper, and they did address the bullpen at the deadline too. They picked up Michael Fulmer, who I mentioned earlier from the Tigers.
Yep.
And that was supposed to be like a really key move for those seventh, eighth innings. He's got a 5.60 ERA and a 1.98 WHIP for them. He's pitching fine for the Tigers. They picked up Jorge Lopez from the Orioles. He was doing well for the Orioles. He's made four appearances. Am I right on that? No, I'm looking. Am I right? He's made four appearances for them, or am I looking in the wrong line right now on my sheet?
This is questions
that can't be right.
I don't think that's true, but
yeah, no, I gotta be. This sheet I was looking at is a little messed up. So no, he's got the 5.60 ERA. Sorry, yes. the site I was looking at was the lines were a little off. He's got the 5.60 ERA. So again, they thought this guy can be our closer down the stretch. He's 4-for-6 in save chances. He's got a 5.60 ERA and a 1.98 WHIP. Fulmer, I need to walk back on. He's been okay for them. That's where the lines were messed up. He's been a fine. But again, Lopez was supposed to be.
Yeah.
He's supposed to solve the closer problem.
13 walks and 17 and 2/3 innings. He reverted back to the previous version of Jorge Lopez again.
Yeah.
I remember when everyone was yelling at the Orioles for, how can you trade your closer? I mean, just look at what he's done.
Yeah.
It's so funny that the Orioles did that and Lopez fell apart. Josh Hader got traded and fell apart. Taylor Rogers has fallen apart.
Yeah.
It's almost as if these relievers are just, their value fluctuates pretty rapidly.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Orioles in general have fallen apart. Like, it's not like keeping Lopez would have had them in a wild card spot right now. So they made the right move. If they lost out on the playoffs by one game, someone could come back to them maybe and say, you could have done it, you know, if you didn't.
Yeah, but they're nowhere close to competing with the Astros or anything like that. They would have been a fun little, hey, you made the wild card story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which has value, by the way.
Yeah.
Ask any Seattle fan about that. But at the same time, if you can get good value for Jorge Lopez in his one breakout season, you do it.
Take it.
And now you can, now we have to argue about the return. I don't know the answer to that one there. That's the part that's tricky.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, overall, as I look through the Twins, like, they look like a 500 team at best, which is what they are right now. I think they're a game under 500. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it just came in fits and spurts instead of them just plodding along on their way to 80 wins. They were hot, then they were cold. If you look at it back to the lineup, they've lost Jorge Polanco for a while now, and he did not follow up last season very well. A lot of guys who have gotten a lot of plate appearances for them. Max Kepler's had a really disappointing year. Gary Sanchez has been pretty much exactly what you would have expected. Maybe even worse. Maybe I thought I'd get at least a little more power from Gary Sanchez. So I think the Twins have kind of got what they've been a little unlucky on the pitching side. On the hitting side, they've just kind of got what they put into it.
Right.
Yeah. Carlos Correa has been good, but not amazing, which is kind of, I've always felt like kind of who he mostly is, but
he's going to opt out too. Probably. I'm guessing. We'll see.
Yeah, I guess so. 829 OPS, like, and he's kind of injury prone. What does that get him on? What, I don't know. That's an interesting decision. I haven't fully invested in his contract and everything, but 829 OPS this year, which is good. That's good. It's not incredible, but it's good. Maybe he stays with the Twins.
Yeah.
Keeps the money he already has. I don't know.
Well, and, you know, if Dansby doesn't re-sign, he's out on the market. Correa's out on the market.
Yes.
Trey Turner's out on the market.
Yeah.
Maybe it's disadvantageous to opt out. Maybe, you know, he was kind of waiting anyhow for the musical chairs to stop moving last year. He had to settle for this quirky deal.
Yep.
Xander might opt out.
Stay with the quirky deal.
Yeah. Xander might opt out. That might be another guy he's competing with. You don't want to be the last one standing.
That's right. So, and I don't see why Correa would necessarily be the first one to get a contract out of the people we just mentioned.
Yeah. So unless he says yes first, you know, sometimes
you get
to be like the NHL, the NBA and the NFL, where there's a finite amount of free agent money out there and you better grab it quickly. It's a land rush there.
Yep. Yep. So maybe, I don't know, if I was him, I think I might look very seriously at just staying with the deal I have.
Yeah. It's possible.
Yeah. I mean, there. That's a 3-year, $105 million contract.
It's not bad money.
Two more years on it at $35 million a year. I don't think he beats that. I agree. There's any chance he beats that.
I think they're always looking for like the 6 or 7 year deal, but they want to get the Lindor type of deal. But you didn't have a Lindor type of season. So his defense is excellent. I'll say that. Correa's defense is still superb.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting issue for him.
And we know teams like short contracts in general. So with so many shortstops out there, is someone going to rush to give him a 6-year deal, or are they going to say, forget it, I'm going to throw a 3-year deal to all these guys and we'll see who takes it?
Right.
Yeah. Maybe not at all the same exact same dollar figure, but maybe I could see teams doing that because we know baseball teams prefer the short deals.
Right.
Except for the true.
Truly special players.
Yes, yes.
And which teams are going to be looking? Like, you look at, for instance, my Reds, they're not going to be spending anything. Even if they were, they've just traded for 7 shortstop prospects. They have a homegrown one in Ellie De La Cruz who might be the best of them all if he stays at short. They're not going to be. That's not a landing spot. You know, the landing spots will be the teams where the guys are walking. You know, Correa, you go to Atlanta.
Yep. Shortstop shuffle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. You can take the Reds and probably 8 other teams out of it because they're just not even interested in signing someone to a big contract right now. And then you take out all the teams that are good but have a shortstop. And like you said, it'll probably just be musical chairs with a lot of the teams that their shortstops are leaving.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to cut a little shorter today. A lot of stuff to deal with today. So thank you everybody for tuning in and jump in on that Twitter thread. Let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you on that. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to So Rare for the sponsorship. And we'll be back at you again next week. Thanks for listening.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.